This Originally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Let's check on some stories happening here in Northwest Indiana that have been covered by our reporters that we talk to on a regular basis. And one of them is Dan Carton. He is covering most of Lake local politics as well as state politics for the Times of Northwest Indiana. And Dan is with us from the Times newsroom. Thank you for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
Well, let's take a look first at some of the update stories here on the Tuesday primary election, and in particular about the nomination by Frank Brevan, who will be on the ballot for the Democratic Party nomination for the first district Congress race. Fill us in on how things turned out, and Mervan's comments as well too about how he feels about going into the November general election as the Democratic nominee.
Yeah, a lot of people said it was kind of a surprise result to see Mervan win this primary. You remember it was a 14-candidate race on the Democratic side. Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott had spent the most money in the race and had super PAC money, sort of outside anonymous money, helping him as well. Mervan didn't have that as much. I mean, he was fourth in spending. But he managed to get 34% of the vote, which was enough in a 14-candidate race. McDermott came in with 29%, and then everybody else was well below that. And what Mervan had, and McDermott didn't, was the backing of Congressman Wisolowski. Pete has represented Northwest Indiana in the U.S. House for 36 years. He endorsed Mervan in March. Sort of put his organization to work behind Mervan, and it paid off. It showed that the Wisolowski organization that helped him stay in office for four decades almost, still had enough oomph to get Mervan across the finish line in a very hotly contested primary race.
Now, I know that you go into more detail in your story in the Times talking about who Frank Brevan's going to face in November, but it is interesting to note that even the Republican challenger, who's now the nominee, had some opposition as well.
Yeah, Mark Leyva has run against Wisolowski seven times this century, and we're not too far into the century, and he's lost all seven times, so he's gonna get a shot at running against somebody different, but based on the history of the first congressional district, since it's been centered in Northwest Indiana since the 1930s, there's never been a Republican elected. So I would say Mr. Leyva's chances are about as good as they've been in previous elections.
Now, how does the coronavirus pandemic seem to fit into all of this? We obviously know that's the reason that we had an election on Tuesday, June 2nd, as opposed to into this last month, May. It was because of the delay, because of the election issues itself. But how did it seem to turn out for the campaigning? What was the interesting thing that you note of this that we now know is history?
Yeah, it was... obviously an unusual election because it was moved a month. Indiana has always had its primary in the first Tuesday in May. But it basically scrambled the entire thing. So when Indiana sort of began responding to the coronavirus in early March, there were no more public gatherings, so you couldn't have any rallies. There were no more candidate forums because you couldn't have large groups of people together, and it really forced the candidates to try to find new ways to innovate. Some of them did online events. McDermott did online events. Dion Bergerson on the Republican side did a lot of online stuff, but it turns out it was just sort of good old fashioned footwork that helped Mervan win the race.
I know usually when it comes time to waiting for the numbers to come in on election day evening and election night, it typically happens, for the candidates at the campaign headquarters. But this time around, because you have a social distancing matter to deal with as well, at least two of the candidates picked rather large venues to have their little campaign events. Tell us about that.
Yeah, McDermott had his party at the Pavilion at Wolf Lake. It's a huge concert venue. People could spread out and not maintain that 6 feet social distancing. And Mervan actually had his at a hangar at the Gary Airport. that was it's operated by one of his big donors. And again, you're only allowed to have a maximum of 100 people. It's, at social gatherings in Indiana right now. So 100 people in an airplane hangar is, not a lot of people. Yeah. There's a lot of room to spread out in an airplane hangar. So it ended up being, presumably safe for everybody to go to these events. What was interesting, too, you mentioned the count. There were so many mail-in ballots for this election that nobody knew when the count would be coming. You see the story in the paper in the Times. It's one of several stories that were written based on, what possible different outcomes. There was a pretty good chance for a while that we weren't going to have any results on election night to report in the paper the next day.
Yeah.
And a lot of the absentee ballots finally got counted and added to the totals, and you could sort of figure out what votes were still out there. LaPorte County still hasn't finished completing its counting its absentee ballots, so it's an interesting election for sure.
Now, as we speak here, coming up into the program today, I know the official report is not out yet here in Lake County, and probably not in the other counties as well, too. But the impression that you get in talking with your colleagues, and Bill Dolan in particular, since he did a lot of the stories here that's out there in print right now, what's it seem like when, expecting an official count? Could it come maybe perhaps today or later?
I think the official count won't come. I think they have like 10 days to finalize it. So
yeah.
I believe counties are mostly at 100%. I know LaPorte County had said 72 hours after Election Day, so that would be Friday, although they put out a notice late yesterday saying that they think they'll be able to finish it up today. So, I think more or less all the races are official. There was some closeness in the Lake County Recorder's race, but there's some dispute over one of the candidates believes the vote count has been added incorrectly.
Yeah.
But it looks as though the people who, the Times has declared the winners are going to be the winners.
Mm-hmm. You also had a chance to talk in more detail with Frank Brevan about his campaigning, in particular the support that he got from the Visclosky backers as well, I guess, as maybe that was help kind of put him over the edge, so to speak, and make him the winner?
Yeah, he specifically credited Visclosky as well as the United Steelworkers. They did a joint event in March where both endorsed Mervan's campaign. Obviously, Visclosky has experience representing the region, and a lot of region residents are steelworkers members or connected to someone or have someone in their family. So, Mervan was able to draw on both of those resources to, spread his message that he wants to unify the region and get things done for Northwest Indiana.
We're talking with Dan Carton with the Times in Northwest Indiana about the stories that he's out there in print and online, mainly about the primary election held on Tuesday. But one of the other major stories is a story which has come back once again. It's circled back around to be back in the news, and we're talking about the legal issues involving a couple former school superintendents in Munster and their pay that they had received when they left their jobs. It went to court, it's come back, and I guess it's gone to court again. And do you get the impression that if there is another ruling coming locally, that maybe it'll be closer to a resolution on this?
I have a feeling the Attorney General's office is going to keep pushing this as far as they can. They're really trying to use this as a basis to expand the definition of public corruption to allow them to go after more what they claim are corrupt deals among public officials, and the Attorney General's office seems inclined to keep pushing this. If you remember this case, there's an allegation that these superintendents were overpaid during the 16-year period that they led the Munster schools. There was no evidence of that or no complaint about that in the six audits that covered the period.
Mm-hmm.
But then the State Board of Accounts went back and did a special audit years after these guys had left the school district. And the Attorney General is basing his claims that they were overpaid on that special audit. The superintendents are arguing, hey, there's a statute of limitations here, and we weren't overpaid in the first place. The Attorney General's office is basically making the case that if you're a public official and you committed any misspending at any point in your time in office, we should be able to go after you at any point in the future and try and reclaim that money. So sort of a, I mean, it's a pretty important issue for public officials and public corruption and even just, you know, ordinary citizens.
Yeah,
the reason we have statutes of limitations.
I know that in your story that this is a matter now come back before Lake County Circuit Court Judge Marissa McDermott, and she has until, I guess, the end of June or 1st of July to make a decision as she gets this case back. And then you have your suspicions that it's going to follow through, at least if the Attorney General is going to have his way about it?
Yeah, she ruled in favor of the superintendents the first time in a case. The Court of Appeals affirmed her. The case was pending in front of the Indiana Supreme Court based on an appeal from the Attorney General when the Supreme Court ruled in a somewhat related case out of Jennings County. Mm-hmm. So instead of actually addressing the Munster case, the Supreme Court sent it back to Lake County and said, hey, look at our decision in this case and see if you change your mind. So it's basically starting everything all over again. And it actually hasn't even started. You know, these superintendents have never been brought to trial. It's all a matter of whether or not we can even, you know, have a trial over this issue. So, mm-hmm. you know, if the Attorney General prevails, at some point we'll actually have a trial in this case, which, yeah. you know, by this time, these superintendents will be long retired.
Well, they certainly have, yes, to be sure. One other story, too, we should mention that you had in print and online in the Times here involves Hoosier Schools again, and in particular about the coronavirus pandemic and what the governor has to say about reopening schools this fall. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the governor hasn't given any specific guidance. There's no definitive word, but Governor Holcomb is suggesting that he's inclined to allowing schools to reopen in the fall, and they're at this point trying to figure out how that can be done rather than assuming the schools won't be open. It looks like local school districts are going to be given a lot of leeway. The state seems to be getting out of the make everything statewide. Impose restrictions statewide. They're more inclined to favoring local regulations, especially where maybe coronavirus is more prevalent. So it looks like the state's going to come up with some, they like to call them guardrails for local districts to follow, and then local districts will make the final decisions on when and how and under what conditions they reopen for the fall.
Well, Dan, thank you for spending time with us to talk about the stories that you've put out in print online, and we'll be back with you again soon, we hope.
Sounds great.
Dan Carton is a reporter for the Times of Northwest Indiana. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Gary Housing Authority and Faith CDC is teaming up with a number of hosts of community partners in the Gary area to put on a COVID-19 food relief initiative. Let's find out more about it. We're talking with Julian Marsh. He's executive director for the Gary Housing Authority. And Julian, thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit. Of course, we know about the problem that the COVID-19 pandemic has created here in Northwest Indiana, but what in particular has made things even worse that you all are really, really helping folks in Gary all about these days?
Yes, well, let me just say first that it really is wonderful that we're able to get some food and help some of these families. Right now, we're in the process of distributing with almost 800 boxes of food.
Wow.
To the residents of Gary. And when we heard about this, we thought it would be great if we could make this a truly community initiative. So what we've done is we've pulled together a group to include many of the churches in the city, the Greek organizations, fraternities, sororities, a lot of the nonprofits, Urban League, NAACP, and really, because you think it's easy to give away that much food, but when you have 750-pound boxes of food, it takes a community.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
But the good thing is we've had everybody that's been contacted to come out. We've had a lot of folks that have come here. We've got the food being distributed right now. We have cars lined up to get the remaining food. And for the food that's left, we'll let people drive up. So this is going to be a wonderful event for the community. And we're really happy that we were able to get the whole community to come out and help distribute this vote.
Now, I understand this drive-up giveaway that is underway beginning today actually is going to go on for the next four Thursdays. So it's not just a one-day event. This is a planned program.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So this will be going on for a few weeks through the month of June and possibly longer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's guaranteed to go on through the month of June. So on Thursdays, we'll be distributing food here at the church. And we may, just because of the number of cars, we may be looking at a larger facility next week, but we will keep the public aware. But also, the city does a giveaway each weekend also over at the Genesis Center mm-hmm. here in Gary.
I think that was one of the first places first noted, at least, that the city of Gary was working on. Was there, of course, with the milk distribution, and then they had the fresh fruits and vegetables distribution just recently.
Right, right. So this is an initiative from the Department of Agriculture. And I do have to give a little shout-out to the Department of Housing and Urban Development because mm-hmm. they did inform us of this and guided us to the right area so that we could get in touch with the department and get access to these foods. This really is a collaboration. Like we're talking about the city, but the federal government's involved making it happen. So we are just pleased here in Gary to be able to work together to get this food out to the family.
Now, today's distribution, I know, is there at 656 Carolina Street in Gary, and that's where the 50-pound mm-hmm. boxes of food are being distributed. Is this going to be the same location for the next four Thursdays that you're planning in the initiative?
Well, let me say right now, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But as I'm looking around right now, the cars that are lined up, we may move to a different venue that's larger. But for right now, this is where it's scheduled.
Well, we'll stay tuned for that. We'll find out exactly where it's going to be for the next Thursday distribution, to be sure. So
we'll be sure to make you aware.
Now, we know residents obviously include seniors as well. Is there anything special that you are setting up for seniors that perhaps don't have an opportunity to be able to get over and get involved in the drive-up giveaway?
Oh, yes. Actually, we're not requiring they drive up. So what happened, we asked seniors to call in to the Urban League,
mm-hmm.
We took a list of names there, so we set that food aside, and it's being delivered to the seniors. Because we know many of them don't have the ability to get out, so for them, the food is being delivered.
Now, for those people that would like to take advantage of the drive-up giveaway as it happens on these Thursdays that are scheduled in the city of Gary, what do residents have to do to prove to you all that they, in turn, can get the food?
Okay, well, actually, what they need to do, they need to have an ID, driver's license, or other ID showing that they live in Gary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the main thing. What we're doing, we are saying that the maximum of two boxes per car. So the boxes we're giving out right now are 50-pound boxes. But we don't want to have a lot of folks coming up and getting the food and taking it out of the city. So because this is for Gary residents, but limit two per car so we can let the folks know that. But that's the main thing, and you have to be a Gary resident.
Now, for any more information, where can residents who would like to get involved in this drive-up giveaway be able to call to find out and be able to sure to be there for the next Thursday distribution?
Okay. Now, for the next distribution, what they can do is they can call Progressive Community Church, 880-0850.
That's great. Well, Julian, thank you very much for spending time with us to tell us about this. It sounds like a great crowd that have shown up here for this first distribution, and there'll be more coming up the next four Thursdays planned in the month of June for this very special drive-up giveaway of food helping residents of Gary. And we thank you for spending time to explain this, and hope that you have not only a great distribution today, but all the rest of the ones coming up in June.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for getting the word out so that the people of Gary can participate and get the food they need.
We appreciate helping out. Julian Marsh is Executive Director for the Gary Housing Authority. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Demonstrations are flaring up across the country to protest the deaths of Black Americans at the hands of police. They're also calling attention to broader inequalities. One of those areas, health disparities, kills Black Americans in massive numbers. Side Effects Public Media's Darian Benson and Carter Barrett report.
Black residents of Marion County, where Indianapolis is located, are more likely to be infected with COVID-19 than white residents. They are also more likely to suffer from diseases like diabetes and kidney failure.
There's nothing about Black residents in Indianapolis in particular makes them more susceptible to the coronavirus. What it is it's sort of a result of so many layers of inequity.
This is Matt Nowlin. He co-authored a new report from Savvy, a program affiliated with the Polis Center at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis.
At the end of the day, these systemic inequities can be a life or death issue.
One result is a big difference in life expectancy. Researchers from Savvy and the Richard Fairbanks School of Public Health found a few years ago that people in a mostly white suburb lived to 83 years old on average. 15 miles south in downtown, where there are more minorities, the average was only 69. This pattern in Indianapolis holds true in cities across the Midwest and U.S. And though health issues aren't a focus of street protests, some experts say they contribute to the unrest.
We know that African-American, Latino patients, and other minority patients are more likely to have poor living conditions on average. They're more likely to have issues with food insecurity. They're more likely to have access to non-healthy diets.
That's Dr. Curtis Wright, CEO of Eskenazi Medical Group, the city's safety net hospital. Some patients, he says, might be unaware they are high risk because of poor access to health care.
There's known to be lack of trust in medical providers regarding medications, education about certain conditions, and some preventive measures.
The Indiana Minority Health Coalition has been involved in these issues for years. Here's Vice President of Public Policy, Tony Gillespie.
We're one of the states with the lowest public health investment in the country. Well, you know, you really can't adequately address public health if you don't address social justice issues and social determinants of health.
Social determinants are factors like unsafe housing, lack of transportation, or scarce grocery stores. They all contribute to health problems and make solutions even more complex.
I think when things become just like part of the landscape, then people, you no longer, it becomes deprioritized. And nobody really pays attention to it, and it just becomes yet another issue that has to be addressed across the public health continuum.
Gillespie says the recent protests and outrage are in part a response to these historic inequalities.
I think those people, they are in the thick of it, so they know something is wrong. Do they attribute that to a public health issue? No, probably not. I think there are people who in public health don't necessarily make that connection.
But now many are asking what can be done. The Indiana Black Legislative Caucus is working to address disparities with COVID-19, and many local clinics offer special programming related to diabetes. The Minority Health Coalition wants the state to spend more money on health, and Wright, the Eskenazi CEO, sees a big opportunity in education. The American Cancer Society's Brian Hannon has lobbied lawmakers to make public health policy changes for years. He says change won't come easy.
We shouldn't fool ourselves into thinking that this is a problem we can solve with one policy or with one conversation or with one campaign, and certainly not one legislative session or one budget cycle.
For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Carter Barrett reporting with Darian Benson.
You're listening to a Best of Regionally Speaking. We're going to talk with a man from Cedar Lake who is going to be facing a major surgery that he thought probably was never going to happen. And that's all because of the coronavirus pandemic. Please meet Bob Wernes. He is from Cedar Lake. He is facing a major hip replacement surgery ahead. In fact, it's still on schedule unless something happens between our conversation and then sometime early in June. And he'll tell us more about not only what he's facing personally, but about the experiences of having to deal with the pandemic and the impact that this had on his plans. And Bob, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Okay. A little bit of my story was, I kind of found out that I had a hip problem. Well, last year I felt it, and I had gone on for, found out I had prostate cancer. So I had hip pain, and I said, you know, I'm worried about the cancer may have gone to my hip, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So we had that checked, and And the doctor says, well, I got good and bad news. You know, he says, the good news is you don't have cancer in your hip, but you've got osteoarthritis. So, you know, I didn't get anything done right away because it's, you know, it's a big decision getting your, cutting your bones and things like that. You know, I tried doing a little bit of glucosamine chondroitin, you know, trying to do things, but nothing helped. There was too much deterioration in my hip, and I'm like bone on bone now. So, but, you know, and then finally in March, I was going to get the replacement, and everything was all lined up, and then we got canceled out because of the pandemic, and then I didn't know when it was going to happen. I kept calling in and saying, I'm ready, you know, or, you know, if you guys are. But, you know, nobody knew for sure. It was like things were changing day to day, it seemed like. Yep. And I look forward to getting it done, that's for sure. So, in a lot of pain, a lot of mobility problems. You know, I still function, but, you know, it's a lot of pain. You know, it's definitely want to get it done.
Now, Bob, in your case, was it your job that kind of led to the problems that you have, lifestyle issues or things like that? What have you done for a living that you're now having to have the hip replacement?
You know, I do carpentry, and but from what I understand is with if someone, an individual gets osteoarthritis in the hips, it really doesn't matter what you did. It just is a deterioration on the joint, and I don't know. They said maybe it possibly could have added to it, my activities during my lifetime. You know, a little rough on myself over the years, but they just feel that the deterioration from the osteoarthritis that probably would have happened anyway.
Now, since you were scheduled originally for surgery back in March, near the end of March, and you've had to wait until now because of the fact that elective surgeries have been canceled due to the coronavirus pandemic, besides the pain that you had to deal with, what have you had to be able to do up to now and until the time for surgery to be able to try to cope the best you can?
Well, it's been difficult. You know, I haven't really been able to do my job. I can't really lift any type of weight. I can't really bend down to touch the ground with my hand. So it's been difficult, the mobility part, you know. You know, I try to I have my son work with me occasionally, and then he's pretty much had to do any type of work that we've had out there because at this point, I really can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been difficult.
Now, I suppose you can't exactly say that you're excited to be facing surgery. I don't know if anybody that has to go through any major surgery like that is really excited, but certainly because you've had it delayed, you probably would certainly like to have it done and be able to recuperate from it and have a better life after that.
You know, I really am excited to get it done, to tell the truth. Yeah. You know, it's been this long now, and I just want to get it over with.
Dr. Dennis Naum is your surgeon. He works out of a practice in Munster. Tell us a little bit about him. How did you find out about him, and what has he prescribed for you to do up until now the opportunity for the surgery comes about?
I met Dr. Naum. I had actually back in, it was February or March, with this problem with my hip. I thought possibly it was my back because, it you know, they're so close. I thought it was my lower back.
Yeah, like spinal problems or something like that?
Yeah.
Discs or whatever.
You know,
yeah.
I have something going on like that. Mm-hmm. So I went into Midwest Orthopedics in Chicago at Rush, and I talked with a Dr. Coleman, and then he says, I think most of your problem is your hips, you know. He says, if you still have a problem with your back, I'd be more than happy to look at it after you get your hips worked on. So. But he referred me to Dr. Naum, and I felt very comfortable knowing that, you know, having the referral that I like Dr. Coleman. He was seemed like a really good doctor. I met with Dr. Naum, and I feel real comfortable. I really didn't want to go to anybody else at that point.
Bob Wernis, the best of luck to you, and let's hope that everything goes well in your surgery coming up. It's going to happen in June. And let's talk with the surgeon who's going to be doing the work, Dr. Dennis Naum. He is performing surgery at Munster. He is working with the orthopedic team that comes out of Rush Hospital in Chicago. Dr. Naum, tell us about how you had gotten him prepared for surgery.
we mutually decided after looking at his x-rays that he clearly has severe bone-on-bone arthritis, and the best course of action was for him to undergo a total hip replacement.
Now, with somebody where it is that severe, how can you get them ready for surgery, in this case, for hip replacement?
So the main thing we do is really educate. I mean, in my practice, a lot of people end up coming really towards the end stage of a disease, and so they're looking for answers. They're looking for potential treatments. They've usually failed other modalities such as oral anti-inflammatories or been short courses of physical therapy, and they're almost really begging for some type of solution at that point. So to get Bob ready, we basically just work on education. We talk to him about the procedure, what to expect, how to prepare, how to get his home ready for when he comes home after the surgery, and get him ready to go to get that hip fixed.
And one of the serious issues here because of elective surgery like this is not only the surgery itself, but of course now during the coronavirus pandemic, there was this ban on having such elective surgeries because of the extensive work that would have to be done by the hospital to be able to prepare him for surgery. And of course, you've got protective gear that has to be worn by the surgical team. That I know in turn would conflict, I guess, with what's needed, to deal with the virus itself. In talking with your colleagues, what other problems have you all run into to try to deal with the fact that there are so many people that are in need of elective surgeries, like Bob is, and they've had to wait so long to actually be able to get it?
You hit the nail on the head. I mean, definitely one of the hardest parts, especially, is that you have these patients who are living with severe pain, who've planned for these surgeries and prepared. And of course, you know, the pandemic, unfortunately, has caused everybody to rearrange their lives, whether it's going back to work or vacations or trips or anything like that. Clearly, the number one priority, and especially being at Rush, which was a very front and center hospital for treating the pandemic, is taking care of the patients and who present with COVID. So really, all the resources really needed to be dedicated toward treating those patients and that surge of patients that we did see coming into the hospital, making sure that we have the appropriate personal protective equipment, trying to be as safe as possible to that regard. So, of course, elective surgeries, or quote-unquote elective surgeries, were put on the back burner at that point, which makes 100% sense. But as we got further along in treating and realizing that there's bed availability and potential to be able to treat some of the elective surgeries, it's clear that, you know, we've had to adjust a lot of what we do. One of those things is, you know, making sure that we're screening patients so that they know it's safe to undergo surgery, doing the questionnaires, doing the temperature checks at the front of the hospital every single day, everybody in the hospital wearing masks to protect each other from potential spread. And then here at Rush, we are testing all of our patients for coronavirus before undergoing any elective surgery. So every patient is getting tested before the surgical procedure, just to ensure that they're not asymptomatic and a carrier of the virus.
Now, as far as we know right now, at least, have all these precautions helped make feel more confident, more comfortable in undergoing such a surgery like this?
You know, we've been operating in Indiana since about April 27th with elective surgeries, and in May, since May 11th here at Rush in Chicago. And I operate at two locations, one in Indiana, one in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that I think patients appreciate it. I think they understand that it's a different time and that, you know, this potentially is what we would consider the new normal. I mean, this is the way that things are going to be for the unforeseeable future. And they think they appreciate that we're doing everything we can to try to keep everybody safe. You know, we are limiting visitors, not allowing visitors to come see family members sometimes right after the surgery, just to enable that social distancing. And I think that is something that we have to get used to and patients have to get used to. But I think patients have been really adaptable to this. I think they've been really appreciative of what we're trying to do for them. And at the end of the day, I think they recognize that we're trying to do everything we can to keep them safe and still manage to provide excellent care.
Well, Dr. Nam, Bob Werner says he is looking forward. He actually says he's excited about the surgery coming up here. And Dr. Nam, thank you for talking about this. And we hope that you and the other surgeons working there with Rush in Chicago and as well as in Munster are able to continue on to be able to do the things that folks in Northwest Indiana have asked to be done.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Dr. Dennis Nam is an orthopedic surgeon. He works with Rush not only at the hospital in Chicago, but also his practice in the surgery with Rush in Munster. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. We talk often about the importance of recycling as it fits together with the overall recycling and solid waste disposal issues here in Northwest Indiana. In particular, in the last few months or even longer, of the issues that have come up with various solid waste management districts are trying to deal with the problems of recycling and throwing stuff in that should be trash. Well, that's another case that's come up again. This time it's in LaPorte County, as we found out in not only in Lake but in Porter counties as well. And with us to talk about the issues of making sure that you recycle the right things and not leave stuff out to end up going into the trash, we have Sasha G. Burns. She's the environmental educator and the public outreach coordinator for the LaPorte County Solid Waste Management District. And Sasha, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'll turn things over to you sort of to kind of give us an idea. First, how did, at least in recent weeks, the issue that has come up before in other counties of contaminated recyclables come about? What were the problems that come to the forefront in LaPorte County these days?
Well, we've had a lot of illegal dumping lately. So, and a lot of the dumping is mostly because we have recycling dumpsters. We have a public recycling dumpster located in Michigan City. And it's there for residents that have either extra recycling that won't fit in their bin, or for even the apartment buildings where they won't let us put a recycling dumpster because there's not enough room. Mm-hmm. So it gives people still access to recycle that may not have an opportunity just at their regular house. So we have that in place, but we have a lot of folks that have been home for the last month or so and doing extra cleaning and all sorts of, you know, extra household things. And we end up with a lot of items that are not recyclable. Household furniture, electronics, all kinds of stuff like that that is placed at that public recycling bin, which is where you can put all the same stuff that we accept for our curbside program. We recycle electronics, but we have separate locations that we accept electronics at. But the furniture is maybe like our biggest issue because we have to then pay a company to come and clean that up each day, and it keeps happening over and over again.
How many times would you say, we'll say in the last couple months, since the pandemic basically kept everybody at home, and it also caused problems, too, for the solid waste disposal companies that normally would pick up stuff like at curbside, and we're talking about big items like furniture and stuff like that, how long have these problems with these things being dumped outside the recycling center been one of these areas?
Oh, I bet at least 10 to 15 times we've had like a lot of stuff that was, you know, not allowed there, where we've had to have it cleaned up. But mostly, a lot of times we have people that go out there, and usually the ones that report it to us are the ones that are going out there and doing the right thing. And sometimes we have residents that clean it up and we don't even ever find out about it. But other times we have where, you know, city council members and other things are where they get a hold of us, or residents even, that are upset because it's their area to use and it's being abused.
Which companies are the ones that are the prominent trash haulers and maybe to some point recyclers at residences around LaPorte County? And then the ones that probably had to kind of put aside their pickups because of the pandemic?
Well, as far as recycling goes in LaPorte County, we do the entire county. We do the house, our curbside recycling program. And we contract through Republic.
Mm-hmm.
So they do all our pickup for us. We don't own our own trucks. And so they do that. But there's another company in that operates in LaPorte County, too. They're out of Niles, Michiana Recycling and Disposal, I think is what they're called. They
yeah.
also do some recycling, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, now, but we handle the blue bins that are strictly just for recycling.
Now, were these companies, in particular, Republic and you say Michiana Recycling, were they companies that when the pandemic was really, really hitting hard, they had to basically tell their customers and the companies that work with them, we can't pick up any more stuff here. We can only do it with the trucks, with the automatic systems that are on the trucks. No picking up big stuff. When did that have to take place, and has it in turn gone back to normal, so to speak?
So it's gone back to normal, but it was probably like mid-April, I think,
mm-hmm.
that everybody seemed to be putting out their announcements that they would no longer take items, like bulk items, as far as trash disposal. So I know Waste Management, we put out, because we will share everybody's different posts on Facebook if we see, you know, one of the different trash haulers that are doing something different, just kind of to help them get the word out, too, even though we just do recycling. So, you know, it was probably mid-April that they started doing that, where they wouldn't pick up the bulk items. And it was across the board. All the different garbage haulers were like that. As
yeah.
far as recycling, we had it where we couldn't pick up things outside of the bins. So a lot of times people have extra cardboard boxes and stuff like that that they'll put alongside of their containers. Or they'll have some bagged recyclables that they'll put in, like, the white or clear bags. But we weren't able to pick those up because we were only doing what was actually inside the bins to kind of reduce the level of any kind of germ spreading.
Right.
Now, we had a lot of trouble with people understanding that, too. So it was kind of, you know, the idea that we had people that wanted us that insisted, you know, on thinking that, oh, they just need to wear gloves, but they would have to change gloves at every household where they pick something up, because if they pick something up at one household that was contaminated, it would easily spread to every single other one if they wore the same pair of gloves.
Yeah, so. That's a bad situation, to be sure.
Yeah.
Now, since things have kind of returned more or less to normal, if you want to call it that, have you had any more problems at the public recycling drop-off spot in Michigan City? More stuff junked put outside the containers?
Yeah, we always do. So it seems like it's just becoming more and more prevalent anymore. I think people just don't know what to do with their material.
Right.
So,
okay.
Like, if I have an old bed to throw away, you know, I would go and try to figure out where the proper place is to take that. But, you know, a lot of people, I don't know that that's at the, you know, the front of their minds right now, especially with everything that's going on. We always tell people, give us a call. We're more than friendly and helpful to try to help you figure out where your stuff's going to go. If it won't go into recycling, usually we can figure out where it needs to go, whether it's a landfill item or it's something that can be recycled just somewhere else. So, you know, we always like to point people in the right direction. A lot of times we tell people, you know, if it's something that's still usable, donate it to a thrift shop or a secondhand store to where it can get another use out of it before it goes to the landfill and it has to sit there forever, you know, taking up space.
That's great advice, Sasha. Thank you for sharing that with us today. We appreciate it. Now, what is the phone number or the web address that folks can go to if they would like to get hold of you folks at the LaPorte County Solid Waste District?
219-326-0014, and our website is www.solidwastedistrict.com. And we also have a Facebook page that's LaPorte County Recycling.
Sasha G. Burns is the environmental educator and the public outreach coordinator for the LaPorte County Solid Waste Management District. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. We've had a chance not long ago to find out more about an organization called Positive Vibes Only. It's been founded by Chicago singer and songwriter R.J. Griffith, but they've been very busy these days during the coronavirus pandemic. Let's find out more. With us, R.J. Griffith is with us from his home. Thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Well, for folks that are not familiar or maybe didn't catch our earlier conversation about Positive Vibes Only, tell us about the group and what you all have been doing these days trying to help youngsters stay engaged even though the pandemic is underway.
Yes. So for those who don't know, Positive Vibes Only, we are a 501c3 organization, and we usually host monthly open mics for young people to come and express themselves. But since the quarantine has happened, we have not been able to have any events, unfortunately. So we decided to come up with a contest, which is called hashtag A Good Day to Color. And all you have to do is you just go to our website, rjgriffith.com/coloring contest, and you get to print out a coloring sheet, you color, and you get to enter to win free prizes. Who doesn't like free?
That's right. That's right. I know the main idea of the organization is to showcase talents of young people here in Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland. And you mentioned about the open mics. I recall that you mentioned there was one in East Chicago the last time we talked, and more, I'm sure, all over the region that you've established since then. But the idea, I guess, is really to help people meet new friends. Will going online with the coloring contest help be able to continue all of the ideas that you have created in Positive Vibes Only?
Yes. So with the coloring contest, with that being said, once you color, you have to put your name, your age, your email, and where you're located. So that way we can stay connected through email and we can invite people who have not been a part of any of our Positive Vibes Only events to one of our future events after the, you know, quarantine ends.
Mm-hmm. Do we find that in this way, this is one of many ways, I guess, really to inspire creativity in young people, but this is a good way to not only to keep everybody at least more positive in a time that's not very positive, and also help build that creativity?
Yes. So we know that kids are at home bored. If they're not doing e-learning, they're either on their phones or playing video games. So I was just like, you know what? Kids like to color and draw. So I was like, why not have an incentive for them to be able to do that? You get to, you know, win free $20 gift card. Mm-hmm. You know, who doesn't want that?
go through the procedure. Let's see, go online to your website, rjgriffith.com, and you click in and get into the website, and tell us more about the coloring contest, what young people will see when they go into the site, and how they can in turn take it from there, make it happen, and turn it into a piece of art as well as a way to be creative.
Okay, so first you go to rjgriffith.com, and as soon as you go on there, what's going to pop up, you're going to see blog posts. And scroll down, you're going to see RJ Launches Coloring Contest.
Uh-huh.
So you click on that link on Read More, and then you're going to scroll down. You're going to see this nice, beautiful, colorful picture with our sponsors, Peach Fuzz and Humble House. And also, you're going to just click here. It's going to say click here to download the entry form, and it's going to say to email all completed entries to info@rjgriffith.com. So you click that form. You print out the picture, and all you have to do is color it. You can take a picture of it. You can scan it, or you can send it to our email, info@rjgriffith.com, or you can send it to me directly on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to take those pictures, and we're going to post them up for judgment, you know, and you get to be entered into when one of four $20 gift cards and other great prizes.
That's great. Now, how long is the contest going to be underway? So young people that might be listening now and get into it, get the form printed out, do the coloring and send it back. When will they get to find out if they've been winners?
The deadline is June 1st, so to enter. So we will probably pick on June 3rd the winners. So each week, So we have four categories. We have 3 through 7 years old. So for 1 week, they're going to be, we're going to post their pictures online, and they're going to be having judgment. So people are going to like it and say, oh, I like this one, blah, blah, blah. And then we'll decide the winner from that one. Then we have 8 to 12 years old, and the same thing will happen for them for a whole week. And then for 13 to 17 years old, the same thing. And then 18 and older will have their own week as well.
Mm-hmm. Have you got any entries back yet from some of the categories, and to get an idea of what kind of artwork is really being done out there?
No, we haven't gotten an entry yet,
But
we've had people click the link and download the pictures yet, so I guess they're not done yet.
Oh.
But we've had, I think, at least 26 people click and download the picture.
That's so good. That's good to hear. Well, hopefully this conversation will get you a few more that will get in and have a chance to, like you say, it's an opportunity to show off creativity, and young people can stay active when they're not having to do homework, to be sure, or when they're not on the phone. In talking with your colleagues, maybe on phone or on other social media, about this, is this obviously only one idea that you probably come up with? It's going to be a while before we get the pandemic settled down enough. Are there any more ideas that you and your friends have come up with here that Positive Vibes Only is going to be able to accomplish in the weeks and the months ahead?
Yes. So we've came up with the idea to have a virtual open mic, So via Zoom. So we're going to be launching that in the next few weeks. We haven't set the date yet, but we're going to be starting a virtual open mic so people could come and sign up online, and we're going to see how this works because we've never done it before. So we want to figure out, okay, moving forward, if we cannot have any public events right now, how can we make this happen and still allow people to showcase their talent via Zoom and continue to grow that way in an intimate space, because we didn't want it like on a Facebook Live or anything like that. We just wanted to test it out because all of our events have been open to the public, but it's not something that's like streamed or anything like that on social media while we're having the events, because we want people to get that experience that I have when I perform in front of a crowd of people.
These are great ideas, and I certainly hope that the virtual on mic works out well, and we'll be looking forward to finding out when that's going to happen. We can mention that as well, too. Thank you for spending time talking with us here, not only about the coloring contest that is underway right now, but the plans for the future, too, and we find out more from Positive Vibes Only soon.
Thank you. so much for having me. And go out there and click the link, guys. Go to rjgriffith.com/coloringcontest and click the link and download the picture in color and win these great prizes.
That's Chicago singer and songwriter R.J. Griffith, his organization called Positive Vibes Only. And that's it for our Best of Reporters Roundtable Thursday. Thanks for listening.